Okay. I'm sure Winota's pretty good in Pioneer.
I assume so. I don't know.
I played any Pioneer. Yeah. I built a few Pioneer decks back when the format was announced, and then was going to start playing them in paper, and then the pandemic happened.
Yep.
But it was some pretty exciting nonsense. So this great Grixis deck that I was just raring to go. And no, nothing.
What was in the Grixis deck?
What wasn't in the Grixis deck, Christian?
I don't know. It's not my deck.
Hold on one sec. Let me see if I have it. Welcome to episode number 74 of The Memory Jar. As always, we are here to remember the cards, the decks, the people, and the stories that make Magic the game we love. I'm David Prestwood, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Christian Wright. Christian, how are you? Christian, you are... Silent. Where are you?
I'm silent like a ninja and lasagna, because I'm a real G. What?
thank you, Lil Wayne. There is a silent G there. Has anyone actually ever described you as doing anything like a ninja before?
No. I have really clodden feet, and I'm very not coordinated, so there's no way I can sneak into anything. If I sneak into something, you clearly have bad hearing.
You're a lot of things, but not the first person I would pick to like infiltrate something silently.
No.
And I would be right behind you at the end of that line, so...
Yeah, if we're sneaking into something, I would sneak to get food, but even then I'm not very good at that.
You just get caught, is what you're saying.
I just get caught. Always the hand on the cookie jar type thing.
Well, we are not ninjas, but there are ninjas in a place called Kamigawa, so entirely appropriate. Before we go to futuristic neon ninjas, the spoiler season is in full swing, let's flash it back to the original Kamigawa block, Champions, Betrayers, and Saviors of Kamigawa.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about samurais, ninjas. What a wonderful, crazy world that I have no idea why we're going back to. But that's neither here nor there.
User desire, I believe, is the number one answer. We'll talk about that as well.
We'll talk about that later.
Before we get to any of that, let's crack open the memory jar and see what Scryfall gives us for our random card this week. This week is a good one. Whisperwood Elemental. Whisperwood Elemental is a mythic rare from Fate Reforged. It is 3 green-green for a 4/4 elemental. It says, at the beginning of your end step, manifest the top card of your library. Now, if you don't remember manifest, that is you put a card face down as a 2/2 creature, and you can turn it face up anytime for its mana cost if it's a creature. So it's kind of like morph, but the morph cost is just the creature's cost. You can also sacrifice Whisperwood Elemental, and until end of turn, face up non-token creatures you control. You got all that? Okay. Gain, when this creature dies, manifest the top card of your library. So it manifests cards, and then it keeps manifesting cards. You know, nice little wrath protection, get an army of 2/2s.
This is the beginning of green cards having too much text, but it's a nice little value engine, right? Like, you just make 2/2s. Sometimes those 2/2s are not 2/2s, and what else were you going to do with those cards? Nothing, right?
I guess not. I mean, this was a very playable card in its day. It was very standard playable. It was in all the green devotion decks when that was a thing. And then once Dragons of Tarkir came out, it was a staple in the Megamorph decks that most notably played Deathmist Raptor and Den Protector to recur the Deathmist Raptor and get other cards back from the graveyard and make games last for about a billion years.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what I remember with Whispered Elemental. There was that, and there was the white enchantment that would gain life whenever you would turn a creature face up, and those games never ended. You know, between that and Collected Company, Dragon's Arc here and Fate Reforged really doing a number on the patience we have to play games of Magic.
No complaints here. You're thinking of Mastery of the Unseen, was that enchantment? I'll just read that. That's one in a white, and it says, whenever permanent controls turn face up, you gain one life for each creature you control. And then it also had 3 and a white, manifest the top card of your library. So if you're manifesting a bunch of cards, then you're just gaining an absurd amount of life. And I will note, this card triggered at the beginning of your end step, which is something that we see a lot now as a way to get immediate value when it's not an enter the battlefield effect. That was really nice. We get a lot more now than we used to. At this time, most cards, as I recall, were still waiting until the beginning of your next upkeep to give you whatever cool effect it was. And so I think that's one of the reasons it was so standard playable, given that it's just like a 5-mana 4/4.
Yeah, and the fact that you get the value immediately, and then there's been a trend where you don't get that delayed value. It may be swung a little too hard on the other end of that scale, but it's nice, because otherwise, like, imagine if this triggered at the beginning of the next upkeep. You pay 5 mana for a 4/4 that might have saved your creatures if it died, but, like, otherwise it's just a waste of mana. It's a mythic. You gotta have to make it cool. Make it do cool things for players, so when it comes to play, like, they're not going to feel bad that they spent 5 mana for nothing.
Yeah. Love seeing that Temur watermark on the card. Takes me back to those Tarkir block drafts. It was pretty glorious, other than the unbeatable rare enchantments in Fate Reforged. So forget I said anything. I just like the Temur watermark. I liked those 3+ color decks. And this was a cool card. I don't think I ever got to play this one in Limited, but I'm sure it was a total house. All right, well, let's move on to the main topic. Kamigawa Neon Dynasty is the next set to be released. And we wanted to flash it all the way back to the original Kamigawa block, a Japanese-inspired fantasy smorgasbord that players really liked thematically and have wanted to go back to for a long time. But Mark Rosewater was very specific that even though whenever he polled, it was the top of the list for what people wanted to do, the original sets didn't sell well. And so it was a very unlikely thing. But here we are, and now it's no longer the ancient past. It's the present or future, unclear. And so the new set has this kind of mix of the old world that we'll talk about today and then this futuristic cyberpunk, pick your science fiction genre.
One of the complaints that people did have with this original Kamigawa block is they were expecting samurais and ninjas, and what they got instead was a lot of that spiritual folklore that was inspired by Japanese culture and mythology. That's not what most people think about when they think about Japanese culture. So it was a kind of a mismatch there. And also, all the cards are bad.
We'll get to that. Bad. Yeah, I think a big part of that was just that in America, certainly, we learn maybe a little bit about Japan, but we don't learn the folklore. And the original Kamigawa block played on a lot of Japanese folklore.
So Hayao Miyazaki is a famous Japanese director of animated classics. He and his studio have made some of the best children's films and films of all time, right? You have My Neighbor Totoro, Grave of the Fireflies, Princess Mononoke, Spirited Away, you know, just a long list of animation classics. But there are some really weird films where, as a Westerner, when you see the film, I can't remember the name, but it has the tanuki, and I'm just going to use medical terms, listeners. Their testicles expand in this movie, and they use it to jump around like bouncy balls. But this is a part of Japanese folklore that you just, the average Western person, isn't exposed to unless they study Japan in depth. And it's very weird. And so not like there's a lot of weirdness that people weren't expecting. And when you see that on the cards, like the kami, which we'll get into later, like, the spirits didn't look like spirits. They looked very nightmarish. We weren't expecting that. We're all expecting cute and cuddly and anime and stuff, and that was definitely not the tone that struck with the original Kamigawa. Like, it was definitely the, nope, we did our research, we're going to show our research, and it's going to be really cool, and you're just going to accept it.
As the person that I have named or required to be the podcast Forthos, I know that you have looked back into what the story was for this block.
So full disclosure, this was my one break in Magic. I bought a box of Champions of Kamigawa with my friends, and we didn't like it. And it was also like my junior year of high school. So I just took a break and picked it up again with Ravnica. That said, the story is actually pretty cool. From what I remember, I'll just give you the 1,000 foot view of it. Kamigawa is a set of planes where the humans and the spirits that made up the world called Kami lived in balance and harmony. And something happens, and it starts a 20-year war between the humans and the spirits. While it's going on, there's this guy named Toshiro Umezawa, who's this really selfish, petty, wandering samurai. And he gets to a lot of crazy hijinks, like he pisses off some ogres in the mountains, and he meets up with the Myojin of Night's Reach, which is this god, essentially, like this kami god. And then he gets some magical powers from the Myojin of Night's Reach, which allows him to do stuff, but he's kind of indebted to the Myojin of Night's Reach. All this aside, he runs into the daughter of the Lord of Ganjo, who is Kanda, and the daughter is Michiko Kanda. He saves her because he realizes he's selfish, being indebted to a princess is a great idea, and he helps Michiko Kanda trying to figure out what the source of the Kami War is and try to stop it, and they find out that it was her own father who caused it when she was born. Pretty weird. And basically, your father did a sacrilegious ritual to take a part of the big Kami Okagachi, which is called the very poetic That Which Was Taken, and put it into a prison. What ended up happening was Michiko Kanda and Toshiro freed That Which Was Taken, which came out as a spirit called Kyodai, which is actually a card in Kamigawa Neon Dynasty. And they teamed up and defeated both Okagachi and Lord Kanda. Apparently, the pieces of Lord Kanda have been ground up and they still exist in one of the forests in present-day Kamigawa. The other thing about all this is that Toshiro Umezawa somehow pissed off Myojin's of Night Reach, and to join up with this previously established story, he planeswalked to Dominaria in Blinded, where he had a son, Tetsuo Umezawa, which defeats Nicol Bolas sometime during the Time of Legends. So there's your big virtuous circle of the whole story. Ties into Dominaria history, and that's why we've had a couple of Umezawa since then, and that's basically it.
Yeah, that's a lot to take in, but it just shows you this broad range of characters and the different types of spirits, the kami that exist in the spirit world. As far as I understand, the new story for Kamigawa Neon Dynasty is about the human world merging with that spirit world, and the kami kind of coming back together. And with that, some of those same themes that you see in Miyazaki's work about, for example, humanity's relationship with technology and humanity's relationship with tradition and with nature. So we'll have to see how that all turns out. But let's talk about the cards, because that's what we do here. There were three sets. The first one, Champions of Kamigawa, then Betrayers of Kamigawa and Saviors. Champions was the large set. Betrayers and Saviors were small sets. And they each kind of generally had a theme.
Yeah, so Champions was kind of the begin. Like, this carried throughout the other two, but it was really the focus of Legends Matters. So they had there was a gimmick for this entire block where every creature that was rare was legendary. There's also legendary uncommon creatures too, but had a whole gimmick going, but there's a lot of like Legends Matter stuff, and it was so cool. Everything's a legend. We're going to do cool stuff with legends. Betrayers of Kamigawa, the theme was ninjas.
Yes.
And that's all we're going to say about that. Okay. And Saviors Kamigawa, which is had a theme that's like hand matters. So there's a lot of cards that cared about like how many cards you had in your hand and doing stuff. And it was awful. You're shaking your head. It is widely regarded as one of the worst sets to ever have been made. And yeah, that's pretty much correct. It's up there with Homelands and Dragon's Maze as far as like awful sets that no one knows why they designed them like that.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the block, just look at the mechanics, just a broad failure. We have not repeated these for a reason. So Bushido, Epic, Offering, Soul Shift, Splice, Sweep.
They're hard to redeem. Ninjutsu is cool because it's an actual combat mechanic. That makes sense. Hey, I'm attacking a block creature. Oh, creature jumps in to do some stuff.
The block also gave us flip cards. Now, these are actual flip cards, not transform cards. There was a big thing when we started doing transform cards where the Wizards folks said, you can't call them flip cards. That means something else. These are the cards that have a single face. And if the top is on the top, they're one card. And then if you turn it 180 degrees, so what is the quote unquote top of the card is at the bottom, it becomes another card. They're kind of cool, but they haven't repeated this for a reason. It's a little confusing. We also got Arcane Instants and Sorceries, which was the first instant and sorcery subtype. And then something that did actually capture a lot of attention was the Shrine Enchantment subtype.
So there are five shrines that released in Champions of Kamigawa. There were the Hondens. They all do different stuff. Like the white one is Cleansing Fire. You gain two life for each shrine in play. I think the black one is Honden of Night's Reach because they're based off of the Myojins. Your opponent discards a card for each shrine you control at the beginning of your upkeep. Blue one drew you cards. The red one dealt damage. And the green one made spirits, if I remember correctly. It made like colorless spirits. Yeah. Very cool. Like everyone wanted to get all five shrines in play. And they're all mandatory, so you could actually kill yourself by drawing your deck with the blue Honden. Everyone loved him. They put the Hondens in Arena, so you can do the Tin Shrine experience. Just fan favorites.
Yeah. Set also had a bunch of different creature types that were not common in Magic at the time. So spirits, foxes, snakes. There are so many snakes. Goblins, but kind of different goblins. They're called the Aki, and which is A-K-K-I. And they just look different than other goblins, but still goblins. They're samurai ninjas. Ogres were more common. That falls in line with Japanese folklore. Kirin, moonfolk. Wizards, which we had seen in other places. But monks were kind of an interesting spin on that. Shamans, demons, a lot of warriors. And then also, of course, rats. Famously, a lot of rats in the block. A couple rules changes in the original block as well. With this block came Defender, which mostly replaced the wall creature subtype. I mean, we still have walls. And the way to think about it is all walls have Defender, but not all defenders are walls. Previously, walls just had the abilities. Walls could not attack. And then they said, well, let's actually open this up to other types of creatures.
Yeah, and it makes sense, right? You can have guards and you have guardians and such. And it flavorfully captures this idea of things that are just protecting you.
This set also changed the legend rule. Previously, the legend rule was that if there was a copy of a legendary card in play, nobody could play a second copy. With Kamigawa, you could begin to play a second copy, and when you did, both copies would go to the graveyard. So it created playing copies of legends as a removal spell for your opponent's legendary card.
They changed the legend rule because they knew they're going to have a lot of legends, and it was a very feel-bad rule, because this led to things like, I'm going to play my Tolarian Academy first, and you can't do anything about it. Or, I'm going to play this cool legend, you can't do anything about it, it's in my hand, you have to kill it traditionally before you can play your legend to block it. The interesting little wrinkle with this, though, is that when there's a legendary card that's very good that you need to stop, it turned out the best way to remove it was to just play your own copies. When you go back and look at the tournaments, starting with Betrayers of Kamigawa forward, people played their own copies of Umezawa's Jitte because it was to destroy target Umezawa's Jitte in play. And that was it. That was the only reason some of these decks ran four Umezawa's Jitte.
I can think of some other reasons they should have run it, but yeah, they were doing it defensively, which is a little bit strange. And of course, now the legend rule has changed again, and
yes,
you can have a copy of a legend on your side, and your opponent can have a copy on their side. We're just playing with time, and it's a multiverse out there on the battlefield. I'll also note that there are 19 cards that the Scryfall community has identified as Kamigawa-based that were not printed in the original block. That's not a lot. If you look at, say, Innistrad or Ravnica, the supplementary sets have a lot of different cards, but there are only 19. These, as you would expect, are mostly from Commander sets like Commander Legends or the regular Commander sets. There's some of the Modern Horizon sets, a bunch in Plane Chase, and then, of course, as Christian mentioned, the Sanctum Cycle of Shrines from Core Set 2021. There's also Gifts Given, which is the silver-bordered holiday card that's a play on Gifts Ungiven, which was originally from Kamigawa block, so that makes sense. But yeah, very few overall. If you wanted to build a Kamigawa block cube, you basically have three sets and a little bit more, about to be four.
And what I think this has been very strategic, because the story is set so far back in Magic's history, and it was so unpopular that you could do anything you want and it would be better received than what was done before. So maybe this reset will change things and people will want to go back to, you know, current Kamigawa. Let's move to constructed. So there's a lot of actual good constructed cards. I said earlier that the cards in Kamigawa weren't good. There are some very good cards in Kamigawa block. A lot of them are bad, but some of them are fantastic. And we're going to talk about one we mentioned earlier, Umezawa's Jitte. So Umezawa's Jitte, two colorless for a legendary equipment. When equipped creature deals combat damage, put two charge counters on Umezawa's Jitte. Remove a charge counter, choose one. Equipped creature gets +2/+2 until end of turn. Target creature gets -1/-1 until end of turn. Or you gain 2 life, and it costs 2 to equip. Very, very good. One of the best equipment that has ever been made.
It's just straight up busted. And this is what we talk about a lot of times when we look at new cards. And we talk about knobs that were turned or not turned. This had none of the knobs turned down. So this just requires dealing combat damage, not combat damage to a player. It gets 2 charge counters, not 1. And then you only have to remove 1 charge counter. That's half of them to get one of these abilities. And you can literally do it anytime you want.
Well, and the best part is the charge counters stay on Umezawa's Jitte. So if the creature dies, You could still have 8 charge counters on Umezawa's Jitte that you can use to equip to another creature and then do shenanigans with. Like, or you can remove stuff. Like, I've seen Umezawa's Jittes with no creatures in play kill opposing creatures. It's not uncommon. There's a lot of stories, if you go back and read, like, Ari Lax and some other older pros that have been playing, they have a lot of stories about how they played the Betrayers of Kamigawa pre-release. That was when people realized how broken Jitte is. It's probably too good.
Yeah, the next really archetype-defining constructed card from the set was Kikijiki Mirror Breaker. So this is 2 red for a 2/2 legendary Goblin Shaman. It has haste, and it says, tap, create a token that's a copy of target non-legendary creature you control, except that it has haste. Sacrifice it at the beginning of the next end step. So this is very literally Splinter Twin before Splinter Twin, and it is Splinter Twin, again, post-Splinter Twin being banned.
Yeah, people tried to play fair with it. Like, I've seen it in... Nope, you know what? I changed my mind. I've never seen it played fairly. You're abusing, you know, death triggers with this. You're abusing some shenanigans where Kikijiki untaps itself, whether it's Deceiver Exarch or convoluted combos with equipment from Lorwyn and Shadowmoor and all that. Like, it is designed for combos, and that's fine. You know what? You got to win somehow, and Kikijiki it costs 3 red. It's much more satisfying to lose to Kikijiki than it is to lose to Splinter Twin, in my opinion.
And we should mention the combo. So you tap Kikijiki and target its ability at something that can untap a creature. You untap Kikijiki, then you target it again. You just make infinite copies of it, and then you can attack with them because they all have haste. Or something that will blink Kikijiki itself, and then it comes back in. You tap, you make a copy of that. It blinks Kikijiki. Restoration Angel is a famous combo, so on and so forth. And so you just make a arbitrary number of hasty creatures and then attack your opponent.
So my favorite one of these is Zealous Conscripts, because
yes,
Zealous Conscripts gains control of a permanent, untaps it, and gives it haste. But it doesn't say your opponent's cards. It's any permanent. So you can do it with your own Kikijiki. It's fantastic. Love it. Next, we're going to talk about Blazing Shoal. So Blazing Shoal is X red for an instant arcane. You may exile a red card with mana value X from your hand rather than pay the spell's mana cost. And target creature gets +X/+0 until end of turn. This was part of a bigger cycle. There was 5 of these in Betrayers of Kamigawa where you would exile a card that shared a color with the shoal and it could either counter it or gain life like Nourishing Shoal or prevented damage, which was the white one. And I don't remember the black one. It was really bad, so we don't talk about that one. But the reason why this is broken is, turns out, there are some red cards with high mana values that when you put it on a creature with infect, it kills opponents almost instantly. This was a highlight from the very first Modern Pro Tour where Sam Black made top 8 with a Blazing Shoal infect deck, and it had a lot of turn 2 wins, and they quickly banned it right after the Pro Tour.
Too good with infect. And then there's the green one, Nourishing Shoal. You exile a green card with mana value X from your hand rather than paying its cost, and you gain X life. And this has been used in a lot of Reanimator decks. It was used in the Neo brand decks, which mostly existed before they banned Simeon Spirit Guide. But the idea is you exile a World Spine Worm and go ahead and gain 15 life.
And then stay alive. You know how many cards you can draw off that with Grizzleband?
Yeah, 14.
Yeah!
That's a lot. It's a lot of life to draw a lot of cards. The next one worth talking about is Kataki War's Wage. This is 1 and a white for a 2/1 legendary spirit. And it says, all artifacts have at the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice this artifact unless you pay 1. Just a nice sideboard card against affinity decks who generally could not pay 1 for each artifact they controlled.
Yeah, this was a consequence of Mirrodin Block, which was released right before this. They quickly realized there's a lot of cards in Mirrodin Block that are really busted, and so they needed some pressure valve cards in the next block. So Kataki War's Wage is one of those that was quickly shunted in during development. The other one is Imi Statue, which is from Champions of Kamigawa, and literally it's just artifacts can't be tapped, if I remember correctly. Like, let me read the text on it. It's 3 for an artifact, and players can untap more than 1 artifact during their untapped steps. Literally shoehorned artifact hate. And Kataki has stuck around because it just happens to be really effective against a lot of artifact decks.
Yeah, used to be a really common sideboard card in humans decks until they printed way too many humans that you didn't need a spirit in your sideboard.
Speaking of notable cards from Saviors of Kamigawa, we're going to talk about a oft-reprinted one that does a lot of work. It's Pithy Needle. So Pithy Needle is one for an artifact. As Pithy Needle enters the battlefield, choose a card name. Activated abilities of sources with a chosen name can't be activated unless they're mana abilities. This is just a staple. Like, it does a lot of work that you need, where it could turn off troublesome activated abilities for cheap, and it's been reprinted a ton. It was reprinted in Innistrad Midnight Hunts. It was reprinted in Return to Ravnica, Magic 2010. When Wizards thinks there's too many good activated abilities in cards, this is the Pressure Valve sideboard card that they release just to make sure things are kept in check.
Yep, especially a nice way to turn off Planeswalkers if there's a dominant Planeswalker in the format, or single generic mana. Next is Kira Great Glass Spinner. This is one blue-blue for a 2-2 Legendary Spirit with flying, and it says creatures you control have, quote, whenever this creature becomes the target of a spell or ability for the first time in a turn, counter that spell or ability. This is what is known as the Glass Kite ability, and this just applies it to all of your creatures. This has been a card that has regularly shown up in Spirits decks, and I don't know if it is anymore after the Modern Horizons 2, but it was also usually a one of in Merfolk decks, just as a way to further protect your Merfolk in Modern.
Yeah, it turns out giving all your creatures Pseudo Shroud is fantastic. I've been very annoyed with Kira Great Glass Spinner on the other side of the table, where you just want to kill everything you can't, and you just want to throw that card into the garbage, but it's not my choice.
You got to use two removal spells on Kira, and then the third removal spell on something you actually want to kill.
Awful, 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 awful. This next one, though, this is a legend near and dear to my heart. So this is Azusa, Lost But Seeking. Azusa, Lost But Seeking is two green for a legendary human monk. All it says is you may play two additional lands on each of your turns, and it's a 1-2. All it says, it just lets you play more lands. And, love it. This has been one of my favorite commanders. I guess it also happens to be played in the Amulet Titan deck in Modern, where you want to play a bunch of lands in one turn, and that's all I'm going to say about that.
Definitely a one of in those decks. You used to see more, but there are just too many tools now that let you play more lands or lands off the top of your library, and so it's fallen a little bit out of favor, but yeah, still around there, it's still very powerful. Next one's pretty easy. It's Lava Spike. Lava Spike is red for an arcane sorcery, and it says it deals 3 damage to target player. So it's a burn card, just made burn even worse to deal with.
Yep, it is a redundant lightning bolt, and especially in older formats, the fact that it doesn't target creatures doesn't really matter. You're just casting one of 7 burn spells to your opponent's face, and you're hoping for the best. I will say this did get a bit of a power level errata when they changed how Planeswalker targeting works, because now you can deal, Lava Spike can deal 3 damage to target player or Planeswalker. So slightly more,
that is true.
More functionality these days. Next one's a complicated one. This is also a classic. We're going to talk about Gifts Ungiven. So Gifts Ungiven is 3 blue for an instant. Search your library for up to 4 cards with different names and reveal them. Target opponent chooses 2 of those cards. Put the chosen cards in your graveyard and the rest in your hand, and then shuffle. Have you seen a Gifts Ungiven resolve before? Like, have
they
you seen
one play? They very rarely resolve. There's a lot of concede to Gifts Ungiven. The only time I've seen them resolve is in Modern, when someone's playing what is usually a blue-red storm deck, and they're like, yeah, I'm just going to make sure they have it. Even though they basically get to take the best of their top 4 cards, then they're storming off, maybe they don't have, you know, whatever their win condition is.
You always hope. And also, too, you always in the storm deck, you always are like, well, I'm going to put the 2 win conditions in the graveyard. But then they like have Past in Flames or something, or some other Guardsright Recursion spell, and you're like, well, that didn't matter. I look like an idiot.
Doesn't matter.
Here's my favorite interaction with it. It is up to 4 cards. This is not on the original card, by the way. This has been Oracle texted, because you can only find 2 cards with it. So you would find only Dread Return or Unburial Rites and a creature you wanted to reanimate. And then you'd fail to find 2 other cards. And the thing is, the way it's worded, your opponent has to choose the 2 cards you found, and they have to go into your graveyard. So people use Gifts Ungiven to just shortcut and essentially make it like a pseudo Buried Alive, so they could reanimate whatever creature they wanted on the next turn. Yeah, it's probably not what the people who designed the card intended, but you know, it works.
Well, there's a reason this card is banned in Commander. Its ability is oddly too powerful in that format, though not in other formats, which is a lot for a 4-mana instant.
You would think. And then, of course, Intuition is still legal in Commander, but that card is literal C-notes because it's the card Gifts Ungiven was inspired by, but better. Or worse, I don't know. I don't know how you would characterize it. These blue spells, like, I love them to death, but they are a little too busted.
It's pretty out of control. Speaking of cards that have been banned, Glimpse of Nature. Single green for a sorcery. Ooh. Whenever you play a creature spell this turn, draw a card. Not much to say about this other than it's a 4-of in Legacy Elves, and it is banned in Modern.
Yes, this was pre-banned in Modern. Like, this was so good. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell a little story, if that's all right.
Yeah.
So this card got really popular because there was an extended, I think, Pro Tour with it. And people had, like, there was a couple of teams that had figured out the Elves deck then, but no one knew about it until the first day. So this is like the players meeting the day before day one. And someone asked a question about Glimpse of Nature, and all the judges had no idea what they're talking about. They're like, what card are you talking about? Glimpse of Nature? What does it do? And that's when people started to realize, oh, something's come up, and this is going to be a very dumb tournament. And it turns out, yes, it was a very dumb tournament. People were running on turn 2 or 3 with their Elves decks. I think LSV won that Pro Tour because of Glimpse of Nature and too much value for one green mana.
Well, I'm just going to take this next one so you can do some more talking about it. Sensei's Divining Top. That's a generic mana for an artifact. And you can pay one to look at the top 3 cards of your library and then put them back in any order. You can also tap to draw a card and then put the top back on top of its owner's library. And then in response, your opponent can top to that. And then you can top in response to your opponent's top. And then you can just, oh my God, it never stops.
Oh, it's great. I played this card in Legacy. And this is also one of the few cards that have ever been banned, not because it's too powerful. You could argue it's pretty powerful. But it literally took too much time to resolve it, and tournaments would always add like 3 hours to any tournament time because it's Sensei's Divining Top. Like the stated reason for it. But I love it. Like, this is as we'll talk about later, this is maintained value because of EDH. It's still legal there. And it looks innocuous. How can this be so bad? You're just paying, you have to pay 1 mana to like rearrange the order. You're not even drawing a card. You have to lose control of it. That's the thing. You can never kill it. It never dies, because you always keep it on top, and you're always going to draw whatever card you need at any given time off the top of your deck. It's so good, especially with fetch lands. I love this card so much. I'm so sad that it got banned. I had Portuguese or Spanish tops, so it was El Adivantor del Sensei, and I love to say it like that, and none of my opponents did. But that was my like zest of life that I bought to whenever I played Legacy, and what a good card.
Dear Rules Committee, ban this card Commander immediately. Okay, Christian, what's next?
What's next? I agree with that. The next one is, speaking of combos, this is Heartbeat of Spring. So Heartbeat of Spring is a color-shifted mana flare. 2 and a green for an enchantment. Whenever a player taps a land for mana, that player adds 1 mana of any type that land produced. This was a big deal in Champions Era Standard because it was a combo deck. So you played this and a card from 9th edition called Early Harvest, which was 1 green-green for an instant, and target player untaps all basic lands they control. And so you just generate a ton of mana and then draw your deck, generate more mana, go through that whole nonsense. And then you played a lethal MAGA Trader of Mortals, which they'd lose life equal to number of mana you put into MAGA Trader of Mortals. So
yeah,
it was a fun combo deck, did well in a couple of Pro Tours, you know.
I love seeing this card in Commander. I think more people should play it in their Commander decks. Yes, you know, you give the ability to all your opponents as well, but that's just fun for everybody. Who doesn't love to have an absurd amount of mana and everybody goes off?
Yeah.
Recommended. Next is Sakura Tribe Elder. It's 1 and a green for a 1/1 snake shaman, and you can sacrifice it to search your library for a basic land card, put it onto the battlefield, tapped, and shuffle. Pretty solid little ramp friend there.
And this used to be a lot better because before they changed the damage rules, you could block, have damage on the stack, and then rampant growth, and that was very good. Rampant growth, but better. I don't know why this cost 1 and a green. That, enough said about Sakura Tribe Elder. You should play it in every single one of your EDH decks. It's that good. Speaking of green cards you should play in every single green EDH deck, we have Kadama's Reach. So Kadama's Reach is 2 and a green for an arcane sorcery. You search your library for 2 basic land cards, reveal those cards, and put 1 into play tapped and the other into your hand, and then shuffle your library. First off, this is a common. How insane was Champions to Kamigawa, where you could have a draft, a five-color draft, you could use Sakura, Tribelder, and Kadama's Reach in the same draft? Like, wow. Also, just one of the best ramp spells they ever printed.
Yeah, so popular that Wizards printed a functional reprint of it in Cultivate that is not tied to Kamigawa. We've talked about a bunch of the cards that have been banned from this block. A total of 10 cards have been banned or restricted from the block over time, including a bunch that are commander specific. We don't need to get into, but basically make commander very miserable to play. And so certainly reasonable amount of power here at the top end, but the overall power level of the block, very low across the board. And I think you can see that by, we'll talk in a little bit about commander, and there are not a lot of cards that are oft played from these sets in commander.
Take some time if you're bored and just pull up the entire card list for Champions, Betrayers, and Saviors. Because we kind of hit, there's a couple we maybe didn't hit that are good, but really, there's not a lot. There's just not a lot of good cards. It's all a little clunky. It's all a little awkward. They're trying to do stuff with the legendary rule, and you're like, okay. Like, very specific. Just very weird to read. There's a reason this was kind of a nadir for Magic. You had Mirrodin, which drove people away, and then the next block is these weird commies that are nightmarish to look at, and the cards all kind of stink.
Yeah, I'll have to post a link on Twitter to the Kamigawa block random card button that I created, and go ahead and click on that a couple times and quiz your friends and see how many of these cards they know, because it's going to be less than nearly any other block in Magic history. Ugh.
There's just so many cards that are just bad versions of staples, but they have arcane on them. So many.
Yeah.
It's so just obscene.
Well, you know, it's Grizzly Bear, it's Lightning Bolt, it's whatever with sets mechanic, right? That's what a lot of this was. They just made them arcane.
The one cool thing with Champions of Kamigawa that has kind of been lost to the sands of time, it was the first triple champion specifically was the first draft format that had a hidden draft archetype that wasn't found until near the end of the set. This is the Dampened Thought deck. So Dampened Thought was one in a blue for an arcane instant, and it's just target player mills 4 cards from their library, and you could splice an arcane for one in a blue. So splice, as we talked about, not a great mechanic, but basically as you cast another arcane spell, you can reveal the card that you can splice an arcane with, and you can pay the cost, and you add that spell's effect to the original spell. So you can, for example, cast Eye of Nowhere, which is blue for a sorcery arcane boomerang from Champions of Kamigawa. But if you pay an additional one in blue and you have Dampened Thought in your hand, it turns into, you know, one blue, target player mills 4 cards, and they also bounce a permanent. So this deck just had a lot of cards you could splice into arcane. You had to have a certain number of Dampened Thoughts for it to work. And it was found with literally like 2 or 3 weeks left before the Betrayers of Kamigawa came out, and it became the hotness. So when you know, influenced a lot of stuff like the spider spawning deck, like that was found late in the Innistrad format that everyone wanted to draft. And, you know, other of these late, everyone's trying to find these late breaking draft archetypes going forward because they're fun. And it's also taking cards that normally would be 13 or 14th picks and turning them into like draft and limited masterpieces.
Yeah. One of the things that made that work, you mentioned one of the cards, but there were cards like Peer Through Depths, which was one in a blue, and you look at your top 5 cards, you put an instant or sorcery card from those into your hand, and then the rest on the bottom of your library. That was arcane. You could tack it onto that. Even Psychic Puppetry, which was one of the blue to tap or untap a permanent, you could splice it onto that. And then I think, you know, the most popular one is probably Reach Through Mists, which was just a single blue to draw a card. And so same deal. You know, you're drawing as many cards as possible. You're milling your opponent as much as possible. And then, of course, you can actually cast the Dampened Thought at the end to mill those last 4 or whatever you need. Pretty sweet. Well, I mentioned we talk about Commander, so let's do that. I will note the most popular Commander from Kamigawa is not from the block, but is from a Commander product with nearly 7,000 decklists on EDHREC. Yuriko the Tiger Shadow is the 4th most popular Commander overall. And that's a little surprising, but I don't know, it's very cool. I've seen Ninja Tribal versions. I've seen Top Deck Manipulation versions, which I think are certainly more powerful. Really cool Commander, and it has Commander Ninjutsu. I guess I'll just read the card and make it easy. It's 1 blue-black for a 1/3 legendary human ninja. It has Commander Ninjutsu for blue-black. That means you return an unblocked attack to your control to your hand, and you put this card onto the battlefield from your hand or the command zone tapped and attacking. This doesn't count as casting it, so no matter how many times it's been killed, it's just blue-black to put it into play, which is wildly abusive, which is probably why it's popular. It also says whenever a ninja you control deals combat damage to a player, reveal the top card of your library and put that card into your hand, and each opponent loses life equal to that card's mana value. So it's like a Bob for everybody but you, which is totally unreasonable.
Very unreasonable.
It's like Bob, but the host doesn't show up to the party. The next two most popular commanders are actually from the block. There's Meronar. That's a hard thing to say.
Nope. You're not making me say that word.
is that the tongue twister for the sets?
What was the tongue twister? We'll find it.
I'll look that up shortly. Yeah. Meronar is 3BB for 2/3 legendary rat rogue that says all rats have fear. And you can tap and sacrifice a rat to create X11BB rat creature tokens, where X is the number of rats you control. So this is the ever rare rat tribal commander. I don't know how many rat tribal decks there are. It's not a lot.
Not a lot. There's not a lot of rats in Magic, so good. I'm glad they
I think this is used in Relentless Rats decks.
Sure.
Where you can play as many of them as you want, even in Commander.
Probably. I mean, Pack Rat is in that deck. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
People love rats. I'm not one to judge.
Yeah, I guess it's not my thing. The other one is Shirei Shizo's Caretaker, which is 400BB for a 2/2 legendary spirit. And it says whenever a creature with power 1 or less is put into your graveyard from the battlefield, you may return that card to the battlefield at the beginning of the next end step if Shirei is still on the battlefield. So this is an aristocrat commander. I assume this is probably played with things like Shadowborn Apostle and a lot of demons to just get all your Shadowborn Apostles back into play. And those are the only two commanders on EDH Rec with more than 1,000 deck lists. So not a popular block for commanders by any stretch. They're just very narrow. It's just kind of funny given the number of legendary creatures. Every rare creature is legendary, and they're just not good commanders.
No. Go through the card list, figure out which one of these might be a cool deck, and see what you can do. The problem is they're also all very parasitic. Like, there's a lot of legends that want to deal with samurai, and a lot of legends that want to deal with, you know, warriors and shamans and snakes. And it's hard to build a, you know, there's not a lot of those creatures that exist that are also like mono green or mono white or mono
blue, right,
which is the other problem. I will say, if you can, you should play the Shizo's Caretaker deck, although it is hard to build now because Shadowborn Apostles are $5. So, they're fun. It was fun for a few times. I got to play it, but not great.
Like a lot.
Yep.
I'll just do a quick run through of the top 10 commander cards from the set that are in decks. Number one, not surprisingly, Kadama's Reach. Number two, Sakura Tribe Elder. Number three is Sensei's Divining Top. Number four is Ghostly Prison. We haven't talked about that yet. 2W for an enchantment. Creatures can't attack you unless their controller pays 2 for each creature they control that's attacking you. So basically a color-shifted propaganda. The next is Azusa Lost But Seeking, followed by Forbidden Orchard. That's a land that taps for a mana of any color. And then whenever you tap it, you put a 1/1 colorless spirit creature token into play under target opponent's control. Nice for politics, etc. Followed by Kikijiki Mirror Breaker. Shizo Death Storehouse, a nice legendary land that taps for black, or you could pay black and tap it to give a legendary creature fear until end of turn, which means it can't be blocked except by artifact creatures and or black creatures. Next is Mikokoro, Center of the Sea, a legendary land that taps for a colorless mana, or you can pay 2 and tap it and have each player draw a card. And finally, Kakusho, the Evening Star, is number 10, 4BB for a 5/5 legendary dragon spirit with flying, and when it is put into a graveyard from play, each opponent loses 5 life, and you gain life equal to the life lost that way, which in a commander game means they all lose 5 and you gain 15. Christian, did you notice anything about these cards?
They all do things that
are
either very unique or have...
All of them except for Mikokoro are from champions. There are very, very few cards from Saviors or Betrayers that are meaningfully commander playable in any way.
I'm going to defend Kamigawa block a little bit. I think that there's a couple cards in Betrayers and there's cards in Saviors that should be played more, but people don't.
Okay.
Inkai, Servant of the Oni. I think that's the right name. Let me pull this up real quick.
Great card.
Yeah, that's a great card. It should be played in a lot of black decks, but it's not. Why is that?
I think it's just very expensive and there's a lot of other six drops that fit other decks better. I think what you said earlier about the commanders is dead on. A lot of these cards are just very narrow and they want you to be doing a particular thing. And so it doesn't really fit in. I mean, the fact that Mikokoro, a land that draws every player a card, is one of the top played cards from the block, shows you that if it's not just generically good, it's not going to make it. These cards are not rawly powerful enough to penetrate.
Here's an example. Like Hokori Dust Drinker. It is Winter Orb on a creature, right? That should be played more often. It's not a gold card.
No, like, no, it should not be played more often. Stop trying to get people to play Winter Orb in Commander, Christian. You monster. That's not played more often because people don't want to
do that, even though
the art is horrifying and wonderful. People don't want to do that.
No, they should do that. People should want to do that. There's also like the patrons. The patrons seem good. Why don't people play the patrons more often?
They're really expensive.
Are
they? You gotta have a curve, Christian. Even in Commander, you gotta have a curve.
The green one is just basically Seaborn Muse. I'm just saying. I'm doing a very painful thing right now. I'm going through Saviors of Kamigawa before we wrap up everything this podcast. These sets are really bad, but they still have some gems. There's still some diamonds in this rough. One of them that I think should be played more often is Overwhelming Intellect. Overwhelming Intellect is 4BB. For an instant, counter target creature spell, draw cards equal to that spell's mana value. It's just very good. Like, it does a lot of stuff you're looking for in EDH. And 6 mana in EDH, that's nothing. You know,
that's a lot of mana, man.
Is it?
That's a lot of mana. You could just cast Sublime Epiphany for that.
Yeah, but people play Draining Whelp. I mean, that does the same thing.
Yeah, but you can flicker Draining Whelp.
I'm trying, man. Look, I'm really trying. I'm trying to...
Okay, how about this? Khanda's Banner, equipment, 2 generic mana. It can only be attached to a legendary creature, right? So this is for your commander. Creatures that share a color with that creature get +1/+1. Creatures that share a creature type with that creature get +1/+1. It's equipped for 2. So that's +2/+2 for your team. At much cheaper than, you know, more powerful effects like Coat of Arms, but +2/+2 for everybody in a monocolored tribal deck.
That sounds great. Here's another one. This is currently 57 cents on TCG Player. I'm going to pick up a copy or two, and we're going to have fun with it. It's Thoughts of Ruin, 2 red for a sorcery. Each player sacrifices a land for each card in your hand. There's a lot of cool ways to play this card. I don't know why it's not played more often.
Oh my God, Christian, you monster. Okay, we can't end on that. I'm sorry, we can't end on that. I've got one that I really actually do like. And that I think has the potential to be a much more fun and interesting settle the wreckage. It's Misako the Humorless. She's 2 and a white for 2/1 legendary human advisor with flash. Tapped creatures you control can block as though they were untapped. So you attack with whatever. It looks like the shields are down. Somebody attacks you. You flash this in. You block with your giant creatures and you eat a bunch of their board. And then this sits around. So you continue getting that value of kind of a pseudo vigilance.
That sounds great. I'm thinking there's a lot more diamonds in this rough, but let's be realistic. There are a lot of stinkers. Like, I can't say this enough. I've been trying to sell some stuff that I think could have some use. There's some stuff that doesn't. It's okay.
We didn't even mention, and we should have mentioned this earlier, so I just want to do it now in the constructed section. We didn't mention Through the Breach and Goryeo's Vengeance.
Oh, yeah. But those are like...
That's just an oversight on my part in the show notes.
Yeah, those are good. But I mean, those were all tied to like Faithless Looting being good.
I mean, to some extent, but you're putting creature cards from your hand or your graveyard into play. Through the Breach is still putting Emrakul into play. You don't need Faithless Looting for that. Goryeo's Vengeance, you do want to bring back your Griselbrand. But okay, so there are a lot of decent cards in the set, but we need to talk about the most important thing before we go. And that's the Tongue Twisters from the Kamigawa block. We talked about this on our Tongue Twister show from April of 2021. Champions of Kamigawa, we agreed, Sasuke, son of Sashiro, which is basically Susie sells seashells in card form.
Ugh. But Champions of Kamigawa, we decided it is Ishi Eki Crackshot. And that is, to try to say that 5 times fast, I'm not going to do it. It's Ben.
No one should try to say 5 times fast from Saviors of Kamigawa is Blood Clock, because you'll say something that sounds like a really unfortunate injury. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
Nope.
All right. So that's our flashback to the original Kamigawa block. A lot of good cards, whole lot of bad cards. I mean, look, don't get me wrong. I would do a Kamigawa Block flashback draft. My local game store is actually doing one in a couple weeks, which is very exciting. And so if I can make it, I will 1,000% be going to that. But just a very different world. And I'm looking forward to seeing what the rest of Neon Dynasty has to show for us. Before we go, Christian and I recently, for the first time in a long time, played some Webcam Commander. And man, it was glorious. I just want to lay out a situation from the first of two games we played, because it involves one of my favorite cards. I know, Christian, you also have an affinity for this particular card. Let me lay the groundwork here. So Christian is playing Kyler Sigardian Emissary. That is a green-white human that gets a bunch of counters, and then when you play humans, and then your other humans get bigger for each counter that's on it. So he's playing a human tribal deck. We have a zombie tribal Verena Lich Queen deck, so Esper Zombies. We have a Sephiris of the Hidden Ways deck. That is an Esper Dungeon Completion Commander. And I am playing what I often call my worst commander deck, although it does better than I ever expect, Audric Lunark Marshall. It's very restricted. It is a human soldier tribal deck. So every creature in it has to be both a human and a soldier. And I can't create tokens that are not either a human or a soldier or both. So it's relevant. I'm going to read you Audric's text. Audric Lunark Marshall is 3 and a white for a rare from Shadows Over Innistrad. He is a 3/3 legendary human soldier. He says, at the beginning of each combat, creatures you control gain first strike until end of turn if a creature you control has first strike. The same is true for flying, death touch, double strike, haste, hexproof, indestructible, lifelink, menace, reach, skulk, trample, and vigilance. One of these things is not like the other. Skulk is no longer a mechanic that is used.
So I want to say for the record that this is a mixture of two decks that are semi-casual and two decks that are very good. Like it is, we are competing. It is not an even playing field. And I will say the human decks are both kind of up against a wall against the other two Esper decks whenever we play.
Yeah, these are not maximized in any meaningful way. And I think the game was going about as we would expect. We got Cyclonic Rifted at one point by the zombie deck. And so we returned everything, replayed a few things. But then the zombies deck, they did it. They played our friend Tombstone Stairwell. He actually took this. He had an opportunity to look at the top four cards and put one of them into his hand, and he took Tombstone Stairwell over better cards because he knows that you have to play Tombstone Stairwell.
To play Tombstone
Stairwell. I'll read this again. 2 black-black for a world enchantment. There can only be one world enchantment in play. It has a cumulative upkeep of 1 and a black. So you have to pay that every upkeep for each age counter on it, and it gets a new age counter every upkeep. It says at the beginning of each upkeep, if Tombstone Stairwell is on the battlefield, each player creates a 2/2 black zombie creature token with haste named Tombspawn for each creature in their graveyard. So every player does this. This is a uniform effect. At the beginning of each end step or when Tombstone Stairwell leaves the battlefield, you destroy all tokens created with it and they can't be regenerated. Cool. So no big deal there. So what the other players at the table, specifically the zombies player, didn't realize is Tombstone Stairwell does not say you sacrifice the zombies at the end of the turn. It does not say sacrifice. It says you destroy all tokens and they can't be regenerated. So I had in play Bastion Protector, which is, of course, a human soldier that gives your commander creatures +2/+2 and indestructible. That means all your other creatures, as long as it's after the beginning of combat, also have indestructible. I also had a Basilisk Collar equipped to a creature, which gives all your creatures death touch and lifelink. So it quickly became clear that everybody was going to make zombies for each creature in their graveyard and stare at each other. And then they were all going to go away, except mine didn't go away. I got to keep mine. Also of note, as we are tribal decks, Christian had a coat of arms in play, which gives each creature +1/+1 for each other creature of its type on the battlefield. So whenever anybody's making these zombies, all the zombies are massive. The difference is mine have lifelink, death touch, and indestructible. And so as everybody's making a bunch of zombies and sacrificing them, mine are sticking around, and I just get to a life total that is impossible for anyone else to come at in any way.
Yes.
So Christian here made a great decision that I want you to talk about.
Yeah, so I saw the writing on the wall. Once we got to explain the whole Audric and Tombstone Stairwell interaction, I had a card in my hand that it took me a beat, and I realized I could get second if I played this because I had four creatures in the graveyard. I distinctly remember the zombies all got plus 17, plus 17. So they were 19, 19s. And those, my four zombies, if they could push damage through, would be enough to kill the Sephiroth player and the Verena player. So I had a Chroma's Will. Chroma's Will is from Commander Legends. It's an instant. You choose one. You control Commander as you cast a spell. You may choose both. The first choice is creatures you control gain flying, vigilance, and double strike until end of turn. And the second one is creatures you control life. You control gain lifelink, indestructible, and protection from all colors until end of turn. So I realized that if I chose the second choice, I could kill the two other players and get second and then die to all the zombies that had been created by you, Dave. And that was just that. Now that I'm reading this, I just realized I could have killed everyone because if I chose the first choice, those 1919 flying zombies had double strike. So I could have killed everyone at the table.
I had enough life where you couldn't have killed them and me. I think you could have just killed me. Then you would have still had to deal with them. Because you only had four zombies, and I was at a stupid amount of life after attacking with my lifelinking zombies.
Fair enough. I just, now that I'm reading this back, I was like, maybe there was a slightly better play to this. But yeah, basically, I killed the Sephiroth player and the Verena player, and then the Sephiroth and Verena players were both like, wait, what? And I was like, but we're done. We get to play another game of Magic.
Yeah, and this is what I like about the decision, and it's a big part of my philosophy about Commander. You know what? Shuffle up and go again. Why do we want to sit in this game and work it out to the very end? And you basically made the decision, hey, I get to get second place. That's kind of a win for me. And then let's go ahead and go again. And so we got to play a very long, really competitive second game where a bunch of us changed decks. And, you know, that one was also a blast. And, you know, I don't know that we would have gotten to really go as deep in that game if we hadn't just, you hadn't made that choice to just take second place.
Right. Yeah, once we could end the game, let's just end the game, start another one. That's the beauty, Commander. The only thing on the line is pride and, you know, not dying too quickly.
Yeah. Well, it worked very well. That was a good Commander night. I look forward to doing something like that again soon. Well, listeners, this was a lot of fun. Thank you for joining us today. You can find us on Twitter at our handle at MemoryJarMTG. We would love your feedback as always. And please tell us what cards you want to remember. Also, if you have not checked out the Magic Card Dictionary that we created, please visit us on Twitter and check it out. We created a dictionary of terms used for types of cards and non-keyworded abilities, and we want your feedback. If you look at the changelog, we have already added a ton of listener suggestions, and we want yours as well.
Yes, and if there's anything that comes up that's new in Kamigawa Neon Dynasty, please tag us. We will be more than happy to add it to the dictionary if it is worth adding to the dictionary. Again, special thanks to Chris Yates for the logo. We greatly appreciate it. You can find Chris on Twitter at CMY Company. That's company with a K. And until next time, please don't try to be silent like a ninja. You probably can't do it. And, you know, play with real ninjas. It's a lot more fun, trust me.